Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's exactly 5 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link. My name is Jen Nyinge.
With me, Jen Ayeko-Kumet. And as usual, Africa Link is live on Facebook, so you can listen to the program there too, as well as join the conversation.
Coming up, Nigerian intelligence officials deny arresting Cameroon separatist top leaders. But what is the mood back home?
The government has been claiming that they are dialoguing with them. How can they claim that they are dialoguing with them for the peace to return? Why at the same time they arrest them? It's not good. Free the Ambazonian leaders and dialogue with them for the peace to return in the country.
And French President Emmanuel Macron, who is on state visit to China, says Europe and China need each other.
Il revient à l'Europe et à l'Asie, à la France et à la Chine.
It is up to Europe and Asia, to France and China, to define and come up with the rules of a game where we could all win or lose.
Well, all that and much more, plus your responses on social media, coming up shortly.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. In Germany, preliminary talks between German Chancellor Angela Merkel's conservative CDU-CSU and the centre-left Social Democrats continue as the country remains without a government 3.5 months after elections. The two blocs will decide by Friday whether they want to launch formal negotiations on renewing their governing coalition of the past 4 years. The leader of the Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, said that talks on forming a new government should produce results that would make Germany the motor of European policy. Merkel, meanwhile, said that she was optimistic about forging a new grand coalition government between the two parties. British Prime Minister Theresa May has reshuffled parts of her government, naming Immigration Minister Brandon Lewis as chairman of the Conservative Party. His predecessor, Patrick McLoughlin, had held the position for 1.5 years. While further announcements are expected, the most senior figures in May's cabinet, including foreign, finance and Brexit ministers, are likely to keep their jobs. The shuffle was meanwhile complicated by the resignation of UK's Minister for Northern Ireland, James Brockenshire, amid a long-running political crisis in Belfast. You're listening to DW News. Human Rights Watch has published a report saying that LGBT people in Ghana suffer widespread discrimination and abuse, both in public and in family settings. The NGO's 72-page report blamed the retention of a colonial-era law which describes same-sex activity as unnatural carnal knowledge. While some Ghanaian officials have publicly called for an end to violence based on sexual orientation and gender identity, the government has yet to repeal the law. Human rights advocate Robert Amoafo said that LGBT people are even afraid to approach the police when they encounter violence.
So when there's violence, LGBT people do not go to the police. They are uncomfortable to go to the police to report. Because of the existence of that law, and people use it as a means to abuse and to make people feel they're illegal in their existence.
Hollywood's biggest pre-Oscars prize-giving ceremony, the Golden Globes, took place in Los Angeles under the long shadow of the film industry's sexual abuse scandal. The vast majority of actresses attended the star-studded event wearing black gowns in solidarity with the victims of the scandal, popularized by the social media hashtag MeToo. One of the biggest stars in U.S. show business, Oprah Winfrey, was given the Cecil B. DeMille Award for her lifetime achievements. In her acceptance speech, Winfrey saluted the women of the MeToo movement and emphasized that abuse of power would no longer be accepted, not in Hollywood, nor anywhere else.
So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say, "Me too," again.
And for more news and information, please go to dw.com or download our mobile app. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Now to our top story, and Nigerian intelligence officials have denied arresting Cameroon separatists after a rebel movement said its top leaders had been abducted by gunmen. According to a statement by the separatist Sisiku Ayuktabe, the president of the Anglophone separatist movement in Cameroon, was arrested in the capital, Abuja.
But at the same time, normalcy is returning to northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon, despite the crisis that has escalated for more than a year between the government and the separatists. From Bua, Cameroon, Moki Kinseka reports.
A spot check by DW at a Umojok primary school in southwest region of the country revealed that fewer than 50 of the 300 children didn't turn up for the start of the second term following a boycott call by separatists. According to a Umojok area chief, Ayamba, many children and their parents have escaped to neighboring Nigeria. He says the government needs to sit down with separatists.
When I hear dialogue, I feel confident that it would give me an opportunity to have my children who are across the border as refugees for a safe return.
The call for all children to stay at home was reiterated by the separatists after Ayuktabe Julius, the man they call the president of the independent state of Ambazonia, was allegedly arrested alongside 8 members of his interim government in Abuja, Nigeria. Cameroon has not confirmed the alleged arrests, but Nigerian media reports that the Nigerian Secret Service carried out the arrests and detained the leaders at the Abuja Central Police District. 26-year-old businessman Evaristus Njie says he supports the separatists because English-speaking region is marginalized and should secede from Cameroon. He has also called for immediate release of all separatist leaders arrested in Nigeria and Cameroon.
The government has been claiming that they are dialoguing with them. How can they claim that they are dialoguing with them for the peace to return? Why at the same time they arrest them? It's not good. Free the Ambazonian leaders and dialogue with them for the peace to return in the country.
The unrest in Cameroon began in November when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. It degenerated with separatist calls for independence. Last October 1, the secessionist group declared the independence of Ambazonia and armed conflicts erupted, prompting a military crackdown. University student Emmanuel Wisanyi supports the arrests, saying resumption of normalcy, especially in the villages where schools have remained closed for more than a year.
It also acts as a sign or as a warning to some Ambazonians who are living in US, South Africa and Europe. The government is doing everything possible to arrest them so that peace can return to the northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon.
The UNHCR reports that the violence has forced at least 7,500 English-speaking Cameroonians to flee to Nigeria since October last year.
Moki Kinseka there reporting from Cameroon.
And certainly that's a story that we've been following on our social media platforms, and people have certainly been commenting. For instance, Alpha Alfred says, that's typically how Nigeria operates. Abduct, arrest and deny. Don't forget what happened to Nnamdi Kanu.
Interesting. Bertrand Oyongo says, now Nigeria is hiding the mess they've created. This arrest is going to haunt them somehow.
And another person called Praise here says, I stand with my Cameroonian brothers in their quest for freedom. Well, keep those comments coming and we shall read them as and when we can. But first, we go to elsewhere in the world. French President Emmanuel Macron has begun an official 3-day visit to China, where he's set to sign a series of business deals with Chinese leaders. Macron's visit began in the Xi'an city. in a nod of Beijing, a nod to Beijing's efforts to revive trade, the trading route.
Now, on his first day on the visit, Macron said he was optimistic France could work with China in the coming months to come up with inclusive political solutions in Libya and Syria to guarantee collective security. China is France's biggest Asian trading partner. Isaac Mugabe with the details.
French President Emmanuel Macron has urged Europe to take part in China's massive road infrastructure project, but warned against hegemony, saying both sides should share the benefits. Macron, who's on a three-day state visit to China, also called on Europe and China to team up on curbing climate change in the face of the US decision to withdraw from the Paris Accord. In his keynote address, Macron appealed to Chinese leaders to form a new working partnership with the European Union on issues ranging from nuclear proliferation to fighting terrorism and climate change.
Il revient à l'Europe et à l'Asie, à la France et à la Chine.
It is up to Europe and Asia, to France and China, to define and come up with the rules of a game where we could all win or lose. I have come here to tell China that I'm determined to move the Euro-China partnership into the 21st century so that it fits in this new framework that we need to define together. Europe will embrace this new strategy because it is now aware of its role and its place in this nascent century. It will get involved as a watchful and effective interlocutor on all of the main topics. Yes, my friends, what I have also come here to say is that Europe is back.
And that report was presented by Isaac Mugabe.
Moving on, with just 100 days in office, President João Lourenço seems to be on the right path, especially when it comes to fighting corruption and nepotism. First, he has already made changes at the highest levels of government, including the central bank, oil and the diamond industry.
Now, most of the officials who have been axed had been appointed by his predecessor, José Eduardo dos Santos, who used nepotism, patronage and patronage to perpetrate himself in power. Sela Oneko with the details.
Isabel dos Santos, daughter of the former president, is one of the many big shots that was not spared the sack. She was heading the state oil firm Sonangol. The country's economy is almost completely dependent on oil revenues. But like many, Angolan sociologist Paulo Inglês, who is a researcher at the University of Bayreuth in Germany, in an interview with DW said that it's too early to judge President João Lourenço's leadership. At least, however, he has brought a little bit of hope for a better Angola.
We are still in transition. It's not the future yet, but neither is it the past still. We will just have to wait and see.
President Lourenço has made major reforms, including granting a temporary amnesty to rich Angolans who are willing to repatriate their funds. And he threatened to take legal action against those who don't comply. Nobody knows exactly how much money the elite is hiding abroad. But Angolan economists have put the total at $28 billion, which amounts to more than the country's international reserves. How tenuous his threats could turn out to be is explained by political anthropologist Jan Schubert from the German University of Leipzig.
This not only ensures him popular support, but also the support of an important part of the ruling party that was dissatisfied with dos Santos. But there are other economic interests, military and party interests. They will probably hold out for a very long time. It is too early to say whether he plans to curtail these two.
Another issue that has raised eyebrows in Lourenço's administration is the retention of dos Santos' son, Zenu, at the helm of Angola's sovereign wealth fund. According to Inglês, there are credible accusations of mismanagement and self-enrichment by Zenu.
The president should order a probe. Then we could leave behind the politics for sure and start working on the real problems.
President Lourenço has also announced pay cuts for himself and his ministers in fresh efforts to cut down on the government's ballooning public wage bill.
DW's Sela Oneko. Remember, we are also live on Facebook, DW Africa. This is DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, cholera outbreak continues to cause havoc in Zambia.
It's really, you know, heartbreaking. The situation is so, so pathetic. We are being protected from dying from, you know, cholera. But the thing is that we are dying now from poverty.
And of course, for sports lovers, don't miss out on our sports roundup with Samson Omale today. But first, to Uganda, where consumers of meat, fish and milk have been thrown to panic after it emerged that some butcheries used dangerous chemicals to preserve beef and to keep away flies. Now, formaldehyde, a chemical used to preserve dead bodies in hospitals, and concoction of other substances are some of those that are being used in food.
Well, in a move to save lives of meat consumers, Kampala Capital Authority and the Uganda Bureau of Standards have mounted an operation to arrest and close butcheries selling the contaminated meat. From Kampala, Frank Yiga reports.
In Uganda's capital, Kampala, Nakasero Market is one-stop center for all groceries and fresh foods, ranging from vegetables, fruits, fish and beef. Until a few days ago, nobody questioned why beef here remained fresh. The shocking news is that some butchers use formaldehyde, a substance used to preserve bodies to preserve beef. Now, Kampala City Council has mounted a search from stall to stall. Law enforcement officers have so far arrested 8 butchers and fish sellers believed to be using illegal chemicals. They look frightened to talk, but the crowds gathered are so angry and bitter.
This is unbelievable that what people eat is all contaminated with chemicals. It is unbearable. Government should come and do something. We cannot continue like this. People should come up and abstain from eating any of these contaminated foods.
From what I've seen today, I will not eat meat again. We are living in fear. Please help us. It's the reason radios keep announcing outbreak of strange diseases.
This operation should also be intensified among milk and meat sellers. Recently, grasshoppers contaminated with chemicals for preserving dead bodies killed people in Kaliisizo town.
But is there somebody to blame?
As for me, I blame Uganda Bureau of Standards and the Minister of Health. They have all the capacity to identify meat that is contaminated with unregulated chemicals, but they are reluctant.
Angela of Uganda Industrial Research Institute tells me about the dangers of some of the chemicals that local butchers use.
So imagine something that is put in a dead body to stop it from decomposing. It is not allowed in any sort of food product in whatever quantities. So it's showing up in meat products, in senene, and in milk products as well. It's illegal. I mean, formaldehyde is what is used to treat dead bodies. So imagine that is what you're ingesting.
I spoke to Wilfred Emeku, a veterinary pathologist at Makerere University, to tell me the magnitude of these chemical substances to humans.
If it can kill all organisms, then it can also kill the consumer. It can cause damage to the digestive tract right from the mouth or to the lower parts. You will expect people to probably have signs like abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, and in severe cases, even death. And formalin, of course, if it damages, it has the possibility of destroying the tissues or even damaging the nucleus of the cells. And in that case, if it occurs, probably cancers can develop in the consumers. And if it is these other insecticides, which usually appear white after dilution, have effects on the nervous system.
Kampala Capital City Authority spokesperson Peter Kawuji tells me this operation will lead to arrest of culprits and closure of non-complying butcheries.
They should keep their premises clean and hygienic. We'll continue to comb all areas. Whoever we come across engaging in non-compliance will be prosecuted in court.
Frank Yiga with that very not pleasant story there, Jane. It's really unfortunate that... The need for cash is rather driving people to do things that nobody would want to.
Absolutely. And you know that, Jane, sometimes makes me feel scared when I get to Uganda. I'm worried if I try their meat. I don't know.
Maybe it's high time we went vegetarian.
Absolutely.
Just to be sure. But, well, you don't know what happens next.
Health check. Cholera outbreak continues to cause havoc in southern African region, with Zambia so far recording almost 60 deaths. The government has already imposed a ban on public gatherings, while business premises have been closed in the central business district of the capital, Lusaka.
Well, from the economic perspective, the damage caused by the cholera outbreak could be very tremendous to an already fragile economy. For more on that story, here is Kathy Sikombe.
I'm in Lusaka's central business district. The usually busy streets are empty with only a few people. The cleaning of the town center has been going on for several weeks following President Edgar Lungu's directive after a cholera outbreak. The outbreak has not only affected high-density areas of Lusaka, but some low-density areas as well. A curfew has also been imposed in Kanyama Township, the most affected area. Traders like Dennis Nondo are now counting losses.
It's really, you know, heartbreaking. The situation is so, so pathetic. We are being protected from dying from, you know, cholera, but the thing is that we are dying now from poverty.
Emily Banda, another trader in Lusaka's Chamba Valley area, had this to say.
People are not even coming, you know, where we trade from because they're scared of the same so-called cholera. Most of like tomatoes, like last week, Sunday and Monday, we threw some of the things, a lot of them.
Patrick Kritikos, an economist, says the business shutdown will have a negative impact on the country's economy.
Now, with the cleanup that has happened, removal of street vendors, people from markets and so on, we have thousands and thousands of families that will not now suffer or die from issues to do with public health, but will now die economically because they will not be able to sustain themselves, be able to send their children to school. And that's something from a policy perspective that needs to be taken extremely seriously.
It is not only traders that have been affected, but schools which were supposed to reopen for the new term this week remain shut. Natasha Kangwa, a grade 12 student in Lusaka, is not happy with the disruption of her studies.
I'm stuck in the house. I'm practically grounded due to the cholera outbreak. I can't go to school, I can't go to church, I can't learn, and I have my exams coming up. I have to do this all by myself.
Ministry of Health spokesperson Dr. Kundam Sonda says the government has taken a multi-sectoral response to contain the spread of cholera.
In as much as cholera is a very lethal disease, it is easily treatable if, you know, a patient presents quickly to a facility and they get that necessary rehydration. And we've been able to save a lot of lives.
The World Health Organization, WHO, has warned that the height of the rainy season in Zambia, coupled with inadequate water supply and sanitation, increases the risk of further outbreaks in Lusaka and other parts of the country.
Kathy Sikombe there reporting from Zambia.
And Jane, since the cholera outbreak in the region, the hashtag Cholera Watch has been trending and many Zambians took to different social media platforms to express their general discontent on how the government is handling the whole issue.
Absolutely. Bonventure Mutale tweeted, this has been caused by the business owners digging shallow wells close to latrines. And he gives a solution, pour up paraffin into a latrine and in 30 minutes you smell it in water drawn from the well, and that can help.
And Mbuyu says the worst thing is that the whole cholera crisis is knowing that after it's gone, we shall carry on with our lives until the next outbreak. This reactive approach to problems is a shame.
Miss Bluaya says having no water during the cholera crisis And your area MP is the Minister for Water Sanitation. You know, it's it's funny. The Minister for Water is from your area, but you don't have water in that particular area.
Well, that sounds more like in Cape Town, where there is water rationing going on right now. But I mean, here it's again the problem of stagnant water and hygienic problems that are causing these. We have another one coming in from Chilongweshi Martha, who says doctors, nurses, medical students go online platforms and educate the public more on the issues concerning hygiene and safe water.
And Wiza is not amused by the reports coming from his home country, because he says we out here listening to cholera updates like it's election results. Cry, my beloved country.
And one last one here from Idilve. He says, one annoying thing about this cholera issue is that we have our ministers asking for donations like this pandemic came from nowhere and wasn't completely preventable. Keep those comments coming and we shall read them as and when we can. But first, it's time for Sports Lovers, and Samson Omale is here with the latest update on what's been happening in the sporting world.
We begin the sports with athletics, where world 1,500 meters silver medalist Timothy Cheruiyot and Margaret Chelimo produced an outstanding performance for Kenyans to take top honors at the first cross-country event for 2018 at the 41st Antrim International Cross Country in Grenmount, Northern Ireland. In an epic sprint finish, IAAF World Championships 2017 silver medalist and Diamond League Trophy winner Timothy Cheruiyot edged out Mogos Tumay of Ethiopia to win the men's 7,200 meters race in 23 minutes, 12 seconds, while Mogos Tumay came second for the runners-up prize. Olympian Sofiane El Bakai of Morocco completed the men's podium in 23 minutes, 32 seconds for the third place. The ladies' 5,400 meters race was won by Margaret Chelimo, who came through to win in 19 minutes, 55 seconds. Ethiopian Fotien Safai crossed the line in 19 minutes, 56 seconds to place second, while Buntu Edau Ribetu, who has represented Bahrain at a World Championships, took third place in 19 minutes 59 seconds. Egypt international and Liverpool striker Mohamed Salah, who was named 2017 CAF African Player of the Year in an event in Ghana last week, says the Pharaohs of Egypt has the potentials to go very far during the 2018 Russia World Cup scheduled for June.
I think we have good national team, and we did very well in Africa Cup and qualification for the World Cup. We did very well, and we qualify. We deserve that. Everyone saw that. And I'm very sure, I'm very happy and very excited for the World Cup, and I'm very sure we're going to do something special in that World Cup.
Staying with the CAF Award, the 2017 African Women Player of the Year Award, Nigeria's Asisat Oshoala says the award has vindicated her move to the Chinese Women's Super League from England's Arsenal ladies team.
2017 was great, yeah, because I had a crazy year with my club, crazy year in terms of being interesting, in terms of the ups and downs, and in terms of not giving up, in terms of pushing hard until the end. I think 2017 was great with my club, Dalian Kwajan, and we hope to make it better in 2018.
Kenya is among countries that will benefit from the FIFA Women's Soccer Project that will see other 2,000 ladies acquire training. The project's program will be rolled out in the first quarter of this year. This is according to the Football Kenya Federation FKF Vice President Doris Petra.
FIFA targets to get about 60 million girls playing football by the year 2026. So Kenya is one of the federations that has been picked for the pilot project. FIFA is going to send us a technical person who is going to sit down with our technical people to plan.
And that sports roundup was compiled by Samson Omale. We are happy to have him on board.
And Jane, let's go back to our top story. And Nigerian intelligence officials have denied arresting Cameroon separatists after a rebel movement said its top leaders had been abducted by gunmen. And people are still sending comments. And Simeon Favor says, we, the Biafrans, are solidly behind you guys. God is your strength. The world will never know peace until the oppressed get their freedom. watch our back, and we are watching yours. Long live Ambazonia Republic. Long live Biafraland.
Some sort of unity there between the Ambazonia and the Biafra. And David from Southwest Nigeria says the Nigerian government must know about his arrest because the people are fighting for their freedom. So the Nigerian government has to be questioned about the man's disappearance. That's all we had time for. From me, Jane Ayeka Kumet.
And me, Jane Nyinge. Thank you.
Have a nice time.
Thank you so much for your time.